Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Carl Mack, and this is Combat Chronicles. This is going to be an episode for the ladies today. Not lady listeners, because I imagine I don't have any, because everyone hates me. But this is an episode about mainly female MMA. I'm going to go over the whole UFC card, but going to launch this episode with a bit of Rising, because if I chuck Rising at the end, there's more of a chance that people might just stop listening at that point, and I'd like to really turn people on to Rising, because A, it's fun, but B, there's some really important fighters fighting on this card that I think you need to know, especially if we're going to be talking about female MMA. But first, I want to lead off with talk about a male fighter, Hideo Tokoro, who I think is one of the legendary journeyman types of mixed martial arts, and journeyman basically because he's been fighting so long, and he will fight basically anyone. Unfortunately, on the losing side of the fight this weekend, but not a loser by any means. He fought Shinryu Makoto Takahashi, who's the deep flyweight champ. I've only seen a little bit of him before, but clearly a good, fun, young, scrambly fighter. And half Tokoro's age, 22 years old to Tokoro's 44. Known as the janitor, that was his job. Tokoro has made £125 here for the first time in his career, 44 years old. Gives you an idea of maybe what he could have been, you know, with a proper career, not a JMMA career, where, I mean, really fun scrambly fight. Let's talk about the fight itself. A really fun scrambly fight. Some really weird positions that, with my limited grappling vocabulary, I can't really describe. I'm sure someone like John Danaher or someone would have weird and wonderful names for it. So it's a really fun scrambles. Tokoro just going for it constantly. Constantly fishing for arms, for knees, for heels, constantly trying to do something. If the younger fighter got out, up kicks. Always trying. Really competitive fight. Fine with the winner. Takahashi, I think he kind of deserved to win. Kept working, got in some fun scrambles and went for it himself. One point, some particularly nasty looking position where he pinned Tokoro's arm behind him. But these guys just kept working, kept moving. Really fun scrambly fight. If there's one fight I really want you to look at this weekend, just for fun's sake, just check that out. But it's to talk about Tokoro as a fighter. This is a guy, as I said, making 125 for the first time in his career. He's 44 years old. He has beaten the likes of Rumino Sato, Imanari, knocked out Pequeno Noguera, who was one of the best featherweights in the world at that point, with a famous spinning back fist. He's beat guys like Darren Ueniyama, who I always liked as a lower weight fighter. He's tapped Brad Pickett. Deserved to beat Hoist Gracie, in my opinion, arguably, in that draw, sort of Gracie rules draw, late notice, and fought fucking Hoist Gracie, much, much bigger than him. So this is just a guy who has just consistently just fought all comers. And because of that, despite his record, which is now, after today's fight, 35 wins, 21 by submission, and 30 losses. No, that's not true. After today, 31 losses. Doesn't mean anything. Absolute legend, not just of Japanese MMA, but of mixed martial arts. And, you know me, I love to talk about the history of MMA. Don't really get to talk about it too much on the the week to week podcast, but if I can talk a little bit about Hideo Tokoro, I will. Just amazing career. A guy who's basically fought, well, essentially, I guess, heavyweight to flyweight now. He's just basically fought all comers. Absolutely mental career, and at 44, he's still scrambling as fuck. He'll still pick up some good wins. I have absolutely no doubt about it whatsoever. I mean, the guy's fought fucking Horiguchi, Hellboy Hansen. He just fought so many guys. So many guys I can't even fucking think of them off the top of my head. I'm just winging it here. But a firm favourite for years. When did I first watch Tokoro? Probably Dream? No, not it wasn't Dream. It was Heroes. Saw him in Heroes. I never saw the early Ring stuff until recently. Watched him in Heroes, then on to Dream. We would have got him on Heroes on Eurosport back in the day. So, yeah, I mean, I've been a fan of his. And obviously, I've seen earlier fights of his now. There's some really good ones in some other tiny fucking... What's it called? Zest or ZST? That promotion. Some really good fights in that, which we never got over here, which I've only seen on YouTube subsequently. I fought Morka Vicious, the Lithuanian guy. Good fighter from those sort of eras, from that sort of early era. So, yeah, man, but the knockout over Nogueira was a legendary one. I think I've put that on Twitter at some point. And, yeah, man, just been a fan of his for years. Not quite 20 years. We're talking like 15 years for me, really knowing who he is. And, yes, he's 44. Still having some really fucking fun fights. But, you know, the focus in this episode is going to be WMMA from this weekend, because the rising atomweight or super atomweight 108-pound Grand Prix kicked off at this Rising 37 event at the Saitama Super Arena. So this was essentially the start of the super atomweight Grand Prix, the main event, which I'm going to start with. Seiko Izawa, who was the 2021 Combat Chronicles Fighter of the Year. Not women's fighter, if you haven't been following the podcast that long. The first fighter of the year, regardless of gender. That's how much of a tear this fighter has been on. Really interesting. The video packages are always good. Always good for Japanese MMA. Ryzen, no exception to that rule. Showed the kind of, should we say, lineage of Izawa. Started with Sakuraba, then Shinya Aoki, and now Izawa, who's this Japanese submission specialist. And she came down to the ring and she looked so confident. She looks like a superstar. She looks like a really lovable, goofy dork of a fighter with this silly sort of shadow boxing. Gets in the ring, starts pivoting around. And she just looks made for this occasion. And Ryzen clearly know. By the fact she's headlining, by the fact that, you know, she's been on this run, this atomweight, super atomweight, sorry, I keep saying atomweight, super atomweight GP is clearly built around her. They know they've got a star on their hands. We are seeing a legitimate star. She's fighting a fighter who I actually didn't watch prior to this event, which was Laura Fontoura. Didn't know much about her. Looks like she was undefeated, really good, 7-0 against his hours, 6-0. Seems to be mainly an armbar specialist. She's really young. There was a picture of her with Hanato Moicano. I don't know if she trains with him, but seems to be some sort of Hideo Gracie gym affiliation. Not sure, but yeah, she came out. And she's only 21 years old. She came out looking kind of like a bit of Wanderlei Silva-ish, just sort of swinging, just to close distance. Pull guard, and had Izawa in a nasty triangle for much of the first round. Sort of head and arm in, one arm kind of out but pressed. Izawa was unable to sort of do much work at all. Pushed Fontoura back towards the ropes. just trying to survive, really. It looked pretty tight, looked pretty uncomfortable, but Izawa knows what she's doing. Really awesome grappler. Started dropping some knees to the thigh. Got out. Mounted, guillotine. Got transitioned. Climbed up. You know, squeezed harder. Got the tap out. After just basically the only... She needed a second. She needed just a second, an exchange, a scramble to end the fight. Fontoura's got absolutely nothing to be ashamed of because she got the fight to where she wanted it. She got a quality fighter in a bad position. And Izawa, basically, once she escaped, it was over. That's how quickly she can end the fight. In that regard, it reminds me more of Saku than Shinya Aoki in terms of being in bad positions, using them to eventually get into a good position and snatch a sub. Aoki, you know, as dangerous as he was, not the most resilient fighter, shall we say. You know, as great as he was as a submission artist and one of my favourite ever fighters. But Izawa it was so quick. She is phenomenal. Did say, don't know much about Fontoura. Looking at her record, it appears to be pretty basic. I'm assuming she's a guard specialist. She's winning by armbar. She's gone for a triangle where she pulled guard. She knew what she was doing. She's 21. She got time to come again. Nothing to be ashamed of. She fought really, really well. The thing with this super atomweight tournament is Izawa's more than likely going to fight someone. I'm not sure how the brackets actually work out, but she's going to fight someone more likely that she's fought before. We're going to get onto the other fights in these quarterfinal rounds in a second. But, you know, it's probably the most interesting fights for her now are fights outside of Ryzen. It's not like the tiny weights, as quality as they are, and they are really good. It's not like they're completely stacked with talent. And Izawa, by virtue of smashing these fighters so early on in her career, because she's still relatively inexperienced. She only took up MMA a couple of years ago, and she's now, you know, basically the best at 105 and 108 in the world, in my opinion. You know, there's the only other fighters that she could potentially beat that you would think from a legacy standpoint or just furthering her standing now in the game, they're outside of Ryzen. So Hamdallah Silva, who was previously in Ryzen, or Angela Lee, who's clearly got, you know, they're pushing over and won, you know, someone like that, those sort of cross promotional fights which are really unlikely to happen. So outside of that, the fact she might get a bit older, might get a bit thicker, eventually get a 115, might see her in UFC, I don't reckon she's got the frame for that, to be honest with you. So, yeah, outside of, you know, fighting people that are too big for her, because, you know, probably a lot of them women are cut into 115 as well, or some bizarre cross-promotional match which isn't going to happen, or leaving Ryzen, you know, it's going to be tough for her to further a legacy now, I think. Depending on how this GP goes, and let's talk about it. Ayaka Hamasaki, who Izawa's already beaten twice, beat Jessica Aguirre, who I didn't even know was still fighting, flaked out of the UFC, but of course will be well known to MMA fans, or certainly to fans of tiny Japanese female mixed martial artist for beating Megumi Fuji back in the day. And then she was the World Series of Fighting strawweight champion. Never really a big fan of hers. She's fought. She gave a decent account of herself here. Hamasaki fought well in the first, second round. Not much happened, and then in the last minute or so, got mount and pulled on. So routine win. Really emotional after the fight, and I'm not surprised. It's the first time Hamasaki's won since New Year's Eve. Since last September. She lost on New Year's Eve to Izawa. That was the fight in which I then gave Izawa Fighter of the Year. She rematched Izawa a couple months back at Ryzen 35, which I discussed on the podcast. So she hasn't won a fight for, you know, coming up to a year. So very emotional for her. And she won. She did as she was expected to. And goes on to the semi-finals. Siwoo Park, who's now fighting out of Crazy Bee, which is, you know, Kid Yamamoto's gym. Legendary Japanese MMA gym. She, again, also mentioned her on the podcast last year, because she has also sadly run into Izawa before. And yeah, just seems to be a really, really solid fighter. She actually battered Kana Asakura. What I really, really liked about Park is essentially just her boxing combinations. Thought her boxing combinations were really clean. Loved the way she would work in lead uppercut. Really liked she'd catch as an open stance, so Asakura lead with a right kick, and Park would grab it, fire back with a right hand counter straight away. Really, really nice work. Second round, fought off takedown, framed off with the left hand, used elbows, punches, everything. Just gave Asakura a real drubbing. And right at the end, right at the death, flattened her with a head kick, and won the fight. So, when I say flattened her, she flattened her, but she won by decision. It was right at the end. So, really good performance from Park. Out of all the people that have fought Izawa, she's one I'd most like to see in a rematch. Got the best skill set to potentially win. And on the other one was Renner. Renner fought a Ukrainian fighter that I've not heard of before. She was 2-0 going into the bout. Her name, out of pure respect, I'm going to fuck this up. It appears to be Anastasia Svetkivska. Apologies to her. I'm sure she's listening. Looking at her, she appears to have a pretty long and extensive amateur career. 2-0 going into this. So, yeah, getting another decent addition to the tournament. Actually did some pretty nice stuff. Her kickboxing sort of reminded me sort of Dutch style. Hooks, set up, low kicks, and punching off the kicks. Nice work. But Renner had the big moments in the fight. First round, clobbered her with a right hand, and then fucking soccer kicked her on the way back up. Really nice stuff. But yeah, you know, I know people love Renner, but I'm not massive on her, so I don't really see her posing much of a threat to the tournament field. But again, obviously, one of Ryzen's sort of shining stars, and as a big fan base, so great for the Atomweight tournament. Only other one I'm going to mention before we go, Ryosai fought on the undercard. Young Japanese Muay Thai and kickboxing prospect. Only, unfortunately, stream didn't work at that point, so I only managed to catch the stoppage, but one to look out for. And Koji Takeda beat Johnny Case by throwing him around like he was prime Chris Benoit. Takeda is just a quality wrestler. I think he was in the honourable mentions for Fight of the Year last year. I say last year, I did it on New Year's, so pretty sure I mentioned him on the podcast well before. So I don't think Rising and upload their fights to YouTube anymore. So either get a VPN and try your luck with their new streaming service, or you know, do what I do and beg, steal, and borrow on the day. But the sad thing is that it is worth keeping up with. So I hope you guys that are listening go, do you know what? I haven't got time. I haven't got time to fuck around trying to get streams. I haven't time to got fuck around getting a VPN. But I will do whatever I can to see the next fight of Seiko Ozawa. Because I think there's a real good chance that we could be seeing, we are seeing, but a special talent, but we could be seeing a very, very special career unfolding in front of our very eyes. So, great to see. If you catch one fight, as I say, I said to check out the Hideo Tokoro fight, but, you know, that's just, you know, it's fun, it's scrambly, it's great to see Tokoro give a heroic performance even at a loss. But if you want to keep up this sort of up to date with what's going on in modern MMA and what's really important in the contemporary field, check out Seika Ozawa beating Laura Fontoura, who I thought gave a perfectly valiant performance in a fight where I probably thought she was just going to get shit canned straight away, to be honest with you. Which she did as soon as Izawa managed to get her hands on her. But yeah, really like Izawa. Such a fun fighter and real fun personality. And Ryzen, for all their attempts, for all of Sakakibara's attempts to shit the bed, have found a star that could potentially lead them in this new little thing they've got going with their streaming service, and probably going to be no Fuji TV going forward. So, but they've got his hour. So, for now. Going to get onto UFC 277 now, but before we get to the fighter a lot of people see as the actual women's MMA pound for pound number one, Amanda Nunes, who rematched Juliana Pena. I've got to push the patron as always, so you have to put up with this rubbish. Combat Chronicles podcast is here to bring you previews, reviews and a look at the rich history of combat sports. The only way we can do it is with your support. So please head on over to www.patreon.com/combatchronicles. But of course, monetary support is not the only way you can get involved. Head on over to your preferred podcast platform and give us a 5-star rating and review to make the podcast more visible to others. Thanks for listening and back to the show. Coming up this week on the Patreon is another episode of Right or Robbery, where I look at a controversial decision through the lens of the actual scoring criteria, the Unified Rules of Mixed Martial Arts. This week's episode, TJ Dillashaw versus Dominic Cruz. Going to be an interesting one for sure. Coming up over the rest of the month, we're going to have a boxing-themed episode, and in September is a real big one. To give me time to prepare a huge episode for October, September is going to be 30 nights of fights, where each day you'll get an episode. It might be short, might be long, might just be 30 to 40 seconds, but it's going to be a recommendation of a fight, bit of history about the fight, why we're talking about it, and why you should check it out as soon as possible. Some of these are going to be really old boxing matches, for which we have scratchy black and white footage, backed up with newspaper reports. Some are going to be really fun mixed martial arts bouts from fairly recent times. Some are going to be, you know, MMA fights from the human cockfighting days, maybe some kickboxing too, bit of Muay Thai performances that I like to showcase. Some of these would just be, look, I'm giving you this fight so I can talk about a certain era of fighting and just sort of wax lyrical about one of my favourites. And some of them are going to be, look, this is important from a technical standpoint, or this is important from a development of the sport standpoint. It's going to be lots of different things. Some will just be absolute stone cold classics that everyone knows that I just want to offer my opinion on. So sign up to the Patreon today. It's only a couple quid or a couple bucks a month. No, times are hard for everyone. If you want the extra bonus material, www.patreon.com/combatchronicles. Anyway, less about what's to come and let's look at what just happened. UFC 277, Amanda Nunes defeats Juliana Pena to win back the women's 135-pound bantamweight title. Cast your eyes back to December 11th, 2021, UFC 269, when Juliana Pena beat Nunes in their first fight in strange circumstances, given just sort of the tactics that she employed, and we're going to look at that in a second. But also, just, you know, Nunes looked out of sorts, tired. The RNC, which actually ended the fight, looks like it was barely in. She's willing to give up at that point, but really just mind-blowing given what Pena did to win. You know, she was getting battered in the first round, started sort of utilising sort of like a really poor up jab in the second round, and Nunes kept boring in, didn't take a head off centre, got tapped up, then got beat up, then capitulated, just fell apart completely. So, yeah, really, really, really weird fight, weird performance, weird fight. And fun, don't get me wrong, fun. I was pretty certain that Nunes was going to sort of smash Pena out this time. And she kind of did and kind of didn't. What's really weird about this fight is just as, and it's kind of like an indictment of women's MMA at this level. When I say level, I don't mean quality, but I mean in terms of weight. It's really thin on the ground, above 115 pounds, but certainly 135 and 145. 155, I mean. The domain of Kayla Harrison. Don't even get me started. So in the first fight, just said it. Pena started utilising an up jab. She's slow, Pena. She's got awful form. She just sort of balls forward and beats the supposed greatest female mixed martial artist of all time. And this fight, Nunes comes out southpaw. And because of that, Juliana Pena can no longer jab. She isn't able to get a front foot on the outside of Nunes's lead foot. the jab, which was so useful in the first fight for her and turned the tide. Now Nunes just, obviously she shifted southpaw. She just hand fights essentially with Peña, who can't get the jab going at all. Nunes, with a very small modification, has now made any sort of success that Juliana Peña could have had essentially null and void. But what's strange is Amanda Nunes, the supposed greatest mixed martial artist, female of all time, also has terrible fight IQ and keeps taking it to the ground, where she tires herself out and gives Peña chances to throw up submission attempts. So a fight that should have been relatively easy if Nunes had stayed southpaw, chopped away of leg kicks, utilised body punches, in and out, just took a step back here and there. Peña would have fell forward, not landed anything, and the jab, as I say, was null and void. As a potential weapon, it would have been an easy five rounds, I imagine. But Nunes, and by the way, forget to mention, she's in causing Peña to fall over her lead leg. When she does step back, Nunes, she catches her with big, clean, single shots. Peña gets desperate, starts throwing caution to the wind, as she did in the first fight with the combos, where she just throws flurry punches, keeps her head on centre, falls over her lead leg, just comes forward to this kind of, I saw it mentioned, described as wine-mom boxing. That's the worst American accent I've done. Wine-mom boxing. Not very good at my accents today, guys. Maybe I never am. Maybe I just finally realised I'm terrible. But yeah, she fights like the famed soccer mum from a couple of years back. It's awful. Nunes steps back, clobbers her, drops her over and over again. If she'd followed her to the ground, could have finished her off. But from the third round onwards, then she does start taking Peña down. By the way, I described Juliana Peña's takedown defence online as making Carlos Condit look like Jose Aldo. She has none. Any time Nunes gets anything resembling a body lock, she's down. If Nunes shoots from, naked shot from way outside, she's down. But in doing this, Peña suddenly gets back in the fight, not in terms of on a round scoring basis, but she's getting close with some of those submission attempts. So arm bars, front up triangles, all sorts, really. Nunes made it more difficult for herself than she needed to. In the fifth round, adjusted, started landing the punches again, won the fight clearly. I mean, clear win for Nunes, but it shows two things. A, she never should have lost to Peña in the first place. Two, Peña, probably the worst champion we've ever had in the history of mixed martial arts from a technical perspective, even looking at the pioneers. She's awful. Really, really bad. And I like awkward anti-technician types. Don't want to say, I only like aesthetically pleasing styles. That's not the case at all. I love awkward banger types. She's just awkward and bad. But also shows that even though Amanda Nunes made this adaptation to take away the initiative from Peña and take away any potential success she could have had, her lack of fight IQ made the fight way more difficult than it needed to be in a fight that she probably won about 50-40 on any sort of sensible scorecard. I mean, won at 50-45, which is insane. That means it was no 10-8s. I mean, come on now. There were a couple of 10-6s in there in all probability. So, yeah, I mean, this is not to denigrate the whole, sport of women's mixed martial arts, but Nunes, who really has built a impressive record over the years and has some really impressive attributes. She has relatively fast hands. She hits hard. She has been able to overcome someone that beat her badly last time. So she's not a complete idiot. But no, she is a complete idiot, and she's bad. I'm not one of these people online who, I see a lot of younger fans nowadays that say, oh, these guys are just bad at MMA, man. They're just bad at MMA. They don't really understand, the context, and maybe they're just unfair. They're hipsters towards lighter fighters. Anything that isn't exactly what they expect a mixed martial artist should be is bad, in their opinion. They're not as good as a 125-pounder. Well, of course they're not. When someone's 70 pounds heavier, their style changes. So you have to take that into account as well. But objectively, Amanda Nunes, despite being apparently the greatest ever and having a resume to match, has basically beaten a load of people that are bad at MMA, and she is also bad at MMA. You know, if bad is not fair at all. Flawed. Flawed is correct. Valentina Shevchenko, she's awesome at so many things, but she is an inherently flawed fighter. Ronda Rousey was an inherently flawed fighter. Cyborg, people love Cyborg, never got it. She's clearly a fucking hard woman, but never got it. By virtue of all the names she's beaten and people that we've all heard of, Nunes has got a claim to being one of the greatest of all time. I just think, you know, the sport's still young. You know, probably what, mid to late 90s for the sport of WMMA, sort of picking up in Japan. The last 10 to 15 years for international expansion on a big scale. Nunes might be the greatest now, but I hope the sport gets better. That's all I'm saying. Because as impressive as she is, and she's fun to watch sometimes. Sometimes she comes sort of waits it out and isn't quite as... You know, when she either smashes people, which I find her quite boring. And this one's a bit of a mix of both. She sort of tried to keep it on the ground, tried to preserve energy, but there was enough moments of fun in there. And Peña, to her credit, made this a fun fight. But I'm done with Amanda Nunes. And I think UFC should be pretty much done with her. There's nothing left for her to do. As Joe Rogan correctly pointed out, I'm sure it's told off afterwards, but there's nothing at 145. There's not really anyone at 135 now. Juliana Peña was an uninspiring challenger first time round and is only somewhat inspiring now because of the aforementioned fireworks in their first fight. Now this narrative is over. I see nothing left for Nunes. She should probably retire, in my opinion, and enjoy her family life, assuming she's made enough money from the famously stingy Ultimate Fighting Championship to be able to do so. Regardless of what the plans for Nunes are from the UFC, it's quite obvious they got plans of Brandon Moreno. I don't know whether it's a company line or not, but Joe Rogan seems to intimate that he thinks that Moreno's still the real flyweight champ. Not really sure how that could possibly be the case, given how he clearly lost to Deiveson Figueiredo last time. But needless to say, the UFC are clearly pushing it. They're desperate for a Mexican champ. So much so that they made this rematch with Kai Kara France an interim title fight. It wasn't even that long ago, was it, that Figueiredo and Moreno fought for the third time? So it seems utterly bizarre to me why they did this. Still, relatively fun fight, all the same. Two fighters that have completely exceeded my expectations, basically. Moreno was a fun, youngish fighter who has become an elite flyweight and now a former champion, which was an amazing moment. And I never really liked Kai Kara France. He always seen me as a kind of relatively low output, pure counter striker. But he makes it work for him. He likes to obviously come out, pop the jab, give you little looks, keep goading you on, feint you, move backwards, laterally move, bait you into making a mistake, and boom, overcomes the right hand. Does it really well, really effectively. It's just quite... what's the right way of putting this? It's not basic what he does, but it's repetitive, essentially. His approach is generally quite repetitive. Makes some fun fights, and he's a bigger puncher than his record might suggest. Real sharp hitter. And what I really liked about this fight was, even though he went with his normal pattern early, by the time the third round came around, when he started, he opened Moreno up with an elbow on the ground or ground and pound after he ended up on top in a scramble. He then started putting it together more. He started mixing in the uppercut. He'd hook off the jab and then bring the right hand behind it, and started really building to something where I thought, we've got something here. Kai Kara Francis, he stepped it up a gear, and I think he's going to take this. And then Moreno, three times in that third round, I counted that lead body kick, and the third time it slapped him and Kai Kara France went down. Follow-up ground and pound was unnecessary. He was finished. So fair play to Moreno for seeing something that worked and continuing with it. Fair play to Kai Kara France for putting in a really good shift. Probably as good as I've ever seen him. Really liked where he took the fight. Fingers to Brandon Moreno, what I really like about him, love how he initiates grappling exchanges just to get you on the break. I think I mentioned this when I spoke about the rematch with Figueiredo. He's really good at doing that, Moreno. One of the best in the sport, I think, right now, at initiating a grappling exchange. If it goes his way, brilliant. If not, he will get you as you break from the clinch, or as you as you come off the fence, or as you get back to your feet. He will get you with an elbow or a punch or a kick or something. He is relentless in that regard. What was interesting about that third round that I mentioned, which was a really good round, by the way, really fun round. Moreno, badly bleeding. Kai Kamara France, clearly on top. Moreno just keeps pressuring him, keeps on the front foot, keeps feinting. His sort of over-exaggerated style of feinting, I usually like that sort of thing, but it quite annoys me. He's got that sort of bladed arm thing he does. It's quite annoying. I know it's not fair to say that Brandon Moreno, the nicest guy in MMA, annoys you, but he does annoy me a bit in that regard. He kind of makes a silly face. He does that really over OTT feinting, but it really does work to draw out reactions, and for a natural counter-puncher like Kai Kamara France, gives him less to work with, because you never really know what Moreno's going to do. He's got a lot of different attacks that he can fall back on, and as we saw in this fight, it's the body kick that ends it. Really nice work, nice fight, totally pointless as a interim title fight. I'm absolutely fine with it being a five rounder, obviously. Am I fine with a rematch for the title of Deiveson Figueiredo? Is it a four fight? Well, it's inevitable, isn't it? It's kind of hope that whoever wins clearly, and that is the end. I really want Figueiredo to win, really. Then he have two wins, one draw, one loss, and he should have won the draw. But as I say, I think that he wants it in Brazil. I think he's not stupid. I think it's pretty clear that the deck might be stacked against him somewhat. Just going to run through the rest of the card, because I want to do a 4-hour podcast on this. Something else going to make me somewhat unpopular, I imagine, is, I'm sorry guys, but I just can't get on board with Magomed Ankalaev. Saw someone online sort of say, look, you know, Anthony Smith, whenever he fights someone elite, looks bad. I don't think that Ankalaev is elite. It's this kind of thing where it's like, well, he's good for light heavyweight. I'm not even sure he's that good for light heavyweight. Low output counter striker, doesn't grapple as much as he should do, even though he appears to be quite good at it, and is a fighter who lost to Paul Craig. I know there's this kind of Dagestani fetish where we assume that everyone from that region is just an absolute monster who's going to save all our bad divisions, and we should just be happy for any kind of former ACA type fighter or ACB or whatever to come along and just save us. Where was Ankalaev? WFCA. But you know, I don't think that necessarily means that Ankalaev is it. He's obviously going to get a title shot next against Yuri Prohaska, which is going to be fun, because Yuri is the kind of fighter who will give Ankalaev more opportunities to counter. But in terms of drawing out his own offence, in terms of doing interesting work, in terms of putting together work that makes his fights bearable, don't think Ankalaev is it. I know they're going to be a contingent of fans that get annoyed at me about that, but I don't really care. I think he's got a really good chance of winning the title, because as I said, Prohaska's going to give him more counter opportunities. But I prefer it if he didn't. I think he'd be quite an uninspiring champion. And at light heavyweight, we need anything possible to make us to keep us inspired, because it's pretty barren. Talking about potential flyweight title fights, Pantoja beats Alex Perez by just jumping on him, basically. And Pantoja is really unlucky that Brandon Moreno is going to get another title shot, because he really deserves one. And I know we'd love to see a rematch with Figueiredo, which was an absolute all-action classic. Alex Perez, former title challenger himself. Pantoja basically just leapt on him from the opening bell, pressured him, attacked him, created a scramble, got on his back, worked his way into either a choke or a crank, and just basically never let up. Just a proper pressure-fighting performance. Now, I know what you might be thinking, like, that it might be maybe fluky, or maybe Perez wasn't warmed up or anything, but at a top level, and this is at a top level of a decent division, you can just run at someone and just attack them. I don't think people understand. You cannot just run at a proper, good, world-class fighter and attack them. And Pantoja doesn't give a fuck. Just ran at Perez, attacked him, pressured him, worried him and then just finished him. Unbelievable. And I really hope they give him another good opponent on the undercard of Figueiredo and Moreno 4. Because if there's anything that happens with those main event, that's the guy that needs to step in. He deserves to step in. Also, that essentially he needs a final eliminator type fight. He deserves it. And, you know, he's just an absolute animal. And, yeah, highly recommend checking out. I'm basically giving you recommendations now out of relatively short fights that are worth watching. I haven't caught up with Michael Morales and Adam Fuggett on the undercard yet, which is weird because Morales, for me, is a really good prospect. And I understand he had a bit of a torrid time in this one, so it will be worth catching up with, but I haven't watched it yet. Just a quick one on Sergey Pavlovich versus Derek Lewis. The blueprint for Derek Lewis has now been figured out. Push him back, hope he doesn't clobber you, and he will fall apart quite quickly. Absolutely fine with the stoppage. He went down face first. Yeah, he jumped up pretty quickly, but he wasn't defending himself. I think he's just going to get splattered. Thing with Derek Lewis is, you think now, with the current run that he's on, and the fact that, as I say, I think he's been very much figured out, he's now lost 2 on the bounce, and 3 out of his last 4, all against, you know, top 10 guys at heavyweight. That's not saying much, because heavyweight is even more barren than 205. But I don't know if you heard, but when his name came on the screen, he got such a big pop, and he seems to be so well liked by fans. Obviously, he's a massive punch, he's a humongous banger, terrifying, just can shave people and lay them out, and sort of memeable interview soundbite. So he just seems to be really popular, and with as barren as heavyweight is, if he doesn't retire, he'll stick around, I'm sure. One that I really want everyone to check out from the prelims, if you check out one fight that isn't a relevant one, so i.e. not a rankings type fight, but just a really fun fight, Drew Dober versus Rafael Alves, just absolutely immense, such a great, fun action fight. Dober's got just a chin of cast iron, as we know, and sandbag fists. Alves is a nutcase. Rafael Alves really gave it to Dober. He's showboating. Some really big, huge exchanges. Loads of big, wide, sloppy hooks. Dober eventually drew it out. Boom. Threw a left body shot. Sort of, almost like a left straight to the body, to the liver. It might be like a solar plexus shot, actually. I'm not sure. He just sort of hit him in the gut, essentially. Fainted him out. He'd be looking for it. Fainted him with the lead hand. Twatted him with the backhand. And crumpled Alves with an absolute beaut. Just a really, really fun fight that I guarantee you will be at least on the honourable mentions on my Fight of the Year calls at the end of the year. I just loved it. I just loved it from start to finish. Really fun fight. Yeah, but you know, the card was okay in general. It was all right. Some fights that were quite meaningful. Some fights that, you know, were a bit of a mess, but it was somewhat fun. Almost certainly better than next week's card, which is Santos versus Hill. So, talking about shit light heavyweights. We got Luke, Jeff Neal on that card. What else is on that? Can I even bother to look? I can't even be bothered to look, to be honest with you. So, maybe no UFC chat next week, just because I think I'm going to be working on the 30 nights of fights for September. Next big one is Chito Vera versus Dominic Cruz, August 13th. Definitely be covering that one. Bit of a weird fight, but definitely be covering that one as a main event. So yeah, let me know at the usual place, at @CombatCR, if you enjoyed the fights, and if you enjoyed the analysis. If you don't, then fine as well. You know, we can't agree on everything. But until next week, which I'm not sure if it will be a free podcast, but definitely a Patreon podcast. Right or Robbery, Dillashaw versus Cruz. Especially timely, of course, because we've got a Dominic Cruz fight coming up. So yeah, stay tuned to the Patreon. And if I do drop something on this feed, I'll be sure to let you know on Twitter over at @CombatCR. Tell your friends. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed the fights. And you'll be hearing from me very soon.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.